The Young Lion, written by Blanche Dalpuget and read by Colin Morgan. Perhaps it was the fever of the times. 2.5 years earlier, in the high summer of 1147, the very moment when the Christian army in France had set out with fervent hopes for Jerusalem, a strange event had occurred in England. The English had eschewed joining the Second Crusade because they had troubles enough of their own. In the old palace of Winchester, that fateful summer morning, King Stephen and his heir, Prince Eustace, received an urgent warning from a royal guard. The monarch and his son stationed themselves behind 2 arrow-slit windows to peer down into the palace courtyard. From their positions, they could observe, while remaining invisible themselves, as 2 young strangers, who had arrived a short time before, waited to be invited inside. They were a well-mounted but travel-soiled pair. One, it appeared, was the master, the other, his squire. Both were tall, slim, and despite their youth, already elegantly muscular. The squire was dark-haired, while the master had a red-gold mane that flashed like metal in the sunshine. The king felt a chill. He knew that hair. Centuries might pass, but Viking blood announced itself like the blast of a trumpet. Although Prince Eustace was only 20, his lips had a curl of cynicism. He suspected he knew who these strangers were. Both were so plainly dressed they could be taken for merchants, even artisans. Except for their fine boots and their horses, no one would believe they were men of rank. A servant dashed along the stone corridor with a note for the king. Eustace glimpsed the name, Fitz-Empress, at the foot of the page, and knew his suspicion was correct. Their visitors were the terrible brothers, sons of the Duke of Normandy. The one with flaming hair, Henry, claiming through his mother, the Empress Matilda, the right to the throne of England. Just months earlier, Henry had invaded the south of the country, leading a group of young barons and counts, none above the age of 18, and 200 Flemish mercenaries. His second in command, the squire in the courtyard, was his bastard half-brother, Guillaume. "My father should kill them both," Eustace thought. "That destry is worth a fortune," he remarked, his eye fixed on the bay stallion the Fitz-Empress rode. "I wonder from whom he stole it."
"Eustace," King Stephen tutted.
"My father is too compassionate for monarchy," Eustace thought. But it was God's will that he had been crowned King of the English when Henry I, the Old Lion, had died. The Empress Matilda was Henry's only surviving legitimate child, and the old tyrant had forced his barons to swear fealty to her. The thought of a female king made Eustace's stomach heave. What were they? Druids? True Christians would never countenance such a perversion of the natural order created by Almighty God. Unfortunately, many had paid homage to her, and the disputed crown had led to years of civil war between the Stephen faction and the Matilda faction. The king did not dare show the letter in his hand to Eustace. The son of the Empress had the gall to ask Stephen, as his kinsman, for money to pay his mercenaries and sail home.